Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're moving beyond the headlines, really digging into the strategic efforts that are, well, literally building the future workforce.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about STEM science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. You know, the absolute building blocks of innovation, of progress.
But the program we're diving into today, it recognizes that just technical knowledge isn't quite enough.
Right.
True innovation needs creativity, needs visualization, communication skills. So they deliberately bring in the arts. They actually turn STEM into STEAM.
STEAM, yeah.
Yeah, consciously doing that. They realize this sort of interdisciplinary approach is, well, pretty essential for producing graduates who are flexible, professional, ready for what's a very dynamic regional economy up there.
Exactly. So our mission today is a proper deep dive into the University of the Highlands and Islands UI, their STEM outreach program.
Mm-hmm.
We're using their comprehensive 24-25 annual review, plus some related context, to really analyze one of the biggest logistical challenges, I think, in UK education.
It's huge.
How do you set up and run a large-scale coordinated STEM effort? One that genuinely tackles rural access issues and skills gaps across a geography as vast, as fragmented as the Highlands and Islands of Scotland.
It is an immense undertaking. I mean, you're talking about coordinating staff, resources across a region stretching from, you know, Perthshire's borders way up north to the tip of Shetland. It's roughly the size of Belgium.
Wow.
Yeah. So we'll be dissecting their model. It's quite innovative, pooled industry funding, localized delivery, strategic collaboration, really trying to understand how they get that reach and impact despite those huge geographic barriers.
Okay. Now, before we get into the nuts and bolts, the structure, the numbers, the sources we looked at contain a really personal note that I feel we have to acknowledge.
Yeah, definitely. The success of this current coordinated effort, it owes a huge amount to the foundation laid by Dr. Evelyn Gray.
Her recent passing was noted in the review. She's remembered as just this passionate champion of STEM education.
Absolutely. Her dedicated work over many years promoting UII STEM across that whole region, Highlands, Islands, Moray, it's explicitly credited with making the current outreach program possible.
Yeah.
You know, her legacy really underscores that these big strategic initiatives, they often come from the passion, the perseverance, the groundwork of key individuals.
That continuity, that dedication, it's so vital. So for you listening, the documents we've analyzed include that annual review for 24-25, specific UII STEM team info, and context about the broader STEM ambassadors network in Scotland.
And it's worth noting, too, that commitment to regional culture is clear. The annual review is published in both English and Gaelic.
That's a great touch.
Yeah.
Okay, let's unpack the program's foundation then, the strategy, the core why behind this massive resource allocation, because this isn't just some flash in the pan initiative, is it?
No, not at all. It evolved. It came out of a long history of more localized, school-based STEM projects. But this current iteration, it was specifically redesigned, scaled up to tackle those really profound, unique, logistical and economic challenges you get with Highlands and Islands rural geography.
And that need for scale, for resilience, it obviously requires serious investment.
Oh, absolutely. The sources confirm this three-year program, it's running with a substantial pooled budget of $1.2
million. Wow.
And crucially, this isn't just UHI finding the cash. This pooled structure, that's the strategic insight here.
Okay, tell us more about that pooling mechanism. Who are the key players actually putting money into this? And, you know, what does their commitment signal about the skills demands right now in the region?
Right. So the funding comes directly from UHI, yes.
Right.
But it's leveraged by really generous support from significant industry partners.
Yeah.
And these are major energy and infrastructure players. Think Duqin, Offshore Wind, Thistle Wind Partners, TWP, Northland Power, Aushin.
Okay, big names in renewables, energy.
Exactly. And this is critical. This isn't like a standard grant funding thing. It's industry investing in future human capital.
So pooling the money strategically, what does that indicate? Why not just fund their own separate things?
Well, it signals urgency, for one, and direct alignment. These companies, they're investing millions into regional infrastructure, especially offshore wind, renewables. And they recognize, quite rightly, that if that skills pipeline isn't built now, they're going to face critical labor shortages in, say, 5 to 10 years.
Right. They need the workforce ready.
Precisely. So by pooling funds, they kind of de-risk the investment for UHI, ensure the program has stability to operate long term, and at the same time, it gives the industry a direct voice in shaping curriculum relevance. It ties the outreach directly to regional economic growth. It's smart.
Okay. So that $1.2 million budget, it's focused on two main aims, interconnected aims. Let's start with the internal one, AIM 1, inspiration.
Yeah, AIM 1 is all about influencing pathways. So that means getting students interested right from the early years, pre-primary through primary, secondary, and into further education and training.
The whole journey.
The whole journey.
You're right.
And critically, inspiration isn't just about the kids. It's achieved by increasing the confidence of both pupils and the educators teaching them.
Wow, that's key.
It is. The program provides equipment, teaching resources, and that crucial in-class support to embed high-quality STEM experiences right within the normal curriculum.
So it's not just like a one-off assembly or a special field trip. It's systematically boosting confidence. Why is teacher confidence such a foundational metric for them? Why is that so important?
Because, well, teacher confidence is the key to making it stick, to sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
If the program just delivers a fantastic one-off session, yeah, the impact's fleeting.
Right.
But if the coordinator works alongside the teacher, shows them simple experiments, gives them lesson plans, kind of demystifies some STEM concepts, then that teacher feels empowered to keep delivering good STEM education long after the coordinator's gone.
Ah, I see.
It effectively embeds that STEM capability within the school itself.
Mm.
It transforms it from being an external thing coming in to an internal competence.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, now the second aim, the external piece. AIM 2, collaboration and coordination.
Yeah, this looks at the bigger picture, the strategic landscape. The goal here is working seamlessly with other STEM partners across the region. Why? To make sure that all those inspirational activities in AIM 1 actually align with real business needs, with local economic growth, national workforce priorities.
Okay.
But there's a crucial equity mandate here, too, addressing those profound equity of opportunity issues you get in rural areas. They explicitly target rural access and gender imbalance as specific focus areas.
How does that equity focus actually play out in practice?
Mainly by focusing on the early years. The sources keep coming back to this. Starting interventions in pre-primary and primary settings is essential because, well, that's often where gender stereotyping starts to take root, isn't it?
Unfortunately, yes.
So by making sure there's parity, equal engagement between boys and girls from age 3 up to 11, they hope to significantly tackle that gender inequality imbalance that, you know, plagues the future STEM workforce further down the line.
And this all loops back to UHI's core strategic view we mentioned at the start, that multidisciplinary STEAM approach.
Precisely. The UHI strategic vision sees STEAM bringing in the arts not just as some nice philosophical add-on, but as a practical necessity for the modern economy.
Right.
They recognize that science grads need to communicate complex ideas, engineers need to think creatively to solve new problems, technologists need to think about user experience, aesthetics.
Yeah.
So this holistic approach, it's designed to produce the most professional, the most flexible graduates possible. As the source says, it enables them to explore new possibilities beyond rigid subject boundaries.
Okay, so we've got the strategy, the why, and that substantial $1.2 million commitment. Now let's move into section 2, the reach and the resources. This is where it gets really practical. Who is actually making this happen on the ground, and how on earth do they cover those massive distances?
Right. The engine room is the UHI STEM team.
Yeah.
And their makeup, their composition, it really speaks volumes about that STEAM philosophy we just talked about.
How so?
Well, this isn't a team made up only of, say, university lecturers.
Yeah.
Their expertise is really diverse. You've got primary and secondary science teachers, vital for aligning with the curriculum for excellence, but also specific discipline experts.
Mm.
Biologists, mathematicians, a zoologist, marine science folk, a geologist, engineering specialists.
Okay, a wide range. But what really stood out to me, as you mentioned, was including a dedicated artist and a psychologist. How do those roles actually functionally enhance delivering, say, an engineering kit or a maths activity?
Ah, well, that's where you really see the power of the A in STEAM in action. The artist, for example, helps design the kits to be visually engaging. They make sure activities require creative problem solving, visualization. Mm. Essential skills for engineering design,
yeah,
right?
Definitely.
And the psychologist's expertise. Likely invaluable instruction sessions to understand and overcome cognitive barriers. You know, helping teachers and pupils understand that failure is actually a necessary part of the design process in engineering.
Oh, that's a big one.
It is. Or developing strategies to boost confidence in subjects like maths, which often have high anxiety levels attached. So this specialized team mix is about optimizing how the learning happens, not just what is learned.
That really is capacity building, isn't it? Not just delivery. Now, let's talk geography. You mentioned the Belgium size comparison earlier. Give us the official spread of the team.
Okay, so the team is distributed across UHI's academic partners, covering a staggering 8 local authority areas. Just listing them highlights the challenge. Shetland Islands, Orkney Islands, Western Isles, Highlands, Moray, Aberdeenshire, Perth and Kinross, and Argyll and Bute.
Wow.
Yeah. The logistical complexity of getting, say, a bespoke physics kit from a central hub to a school in the Outer Hebrides, it's immense.
So the coordination has to be intensely local then. Give us some examples of how that geographic localization works. How do they manage that?
It's a distributed network. So, for instance, Eleanor Hutchin coordinates from UHI Shetland for the Shetland Islands. Rhea Kirkpatrick covers Orkney. On the mainland, Anna Candido Barton covers the large region of Invernessshire and Nairn from UHI Inverness. Further north, in the Western Isles, Angela Macaskill covers Lewis and Harris through UHI North, West, and Hebrides.
And you mentioned linking specific expertise to regional industries.
Yes, that's a really smart move. Take Argyll and Bute, large coastal area, right? The coordination is split. Joe Oliver covers the south from UHI Argyll, while Mia Lang is based up at the Scottish Association for Marine Sciences, SAMIS, covering the northern part of Argyll and Bute.
Ah, based at SAMS.
Exactly. So basing a coordinator there ensures that the marine science discovery kits they deliver are infused with the absolute latest, most relevant industry research. It directly addresses the needs of the local marine economy.
That geographic spread, though, inevitably brings up the question of equipment. If every small remote school has to buy its own fancy science kit, the whole thing falls apart financially. How does this hub and spoke model solve that?
Yeah, the model is brilliant, really, in its simplicity. It effectively decouples the education from the big capital spending. The strategy is that local team members, the coordinators, have a central, fairly inexpensive kit for general use.
Okay.
But the larger, more specialized, more expensive equipment, think programmable robots, high-end microscopes, that stuff is held centrally. At the hub, these items are then booked out and rotated by the STEM coordinators as needed for specific projects in their local schools, the spokes.
That centralization makes access fair, equitable. But I have to ask about the logistics. If a school way out in the Western Isles needs that central kit, doesn't the geography just mean there's going to be a delay? Doesn't that undercut the promise of local access a bit?
That is the constant challenge, isn't it? Running any program in this region. And the sources kind of implicitly address this through how vital the coordinator role is. The coordinator isn't just delivering the session. They manage the logistics of rotating that kit. They often hand deliver it, collect it during their visits. They are the physical link overcoming postal delays and high transport costs.
Okay, they're the logistical linchpin.
Exactly. But the real insight here, the potential game changer, is the future opportunity the sources mention.
Uh-huh.
Scaling this whole system up into a formal regional STEM equipment lending library.
Yeah, okay, what would that achieve strategically? A formal library.
Well, a formal, dedicated lending library, if it had its own dedicated funding, would secure the long-term availability of high-spec kit for every school in the region, regardless of its individual budget. It ensures that the current 3-year program leaves behind physical infrastructure that can outlive this initial funding cycle. It's a mechanism for sustained, truly equitable access.
Makes sense. And to measure the success of this huge operation, the team has invested heavily in STEM data mapping. What's that involve?
Yeah, they didn't just make a spreadsheet. They actually built a geographic model.
Okay.
This model visually captures the precise reach and scope of their activities. It links engagement data directly to specific local schools, community groups, and across those 8 local authorities. It goes beyond just counting heads. It shows exactly where they're getting into communities and, crucially, where gaps might still exist.
And this data tool, like the equipment library, also has a future ambition tied to it.
Absolutely. The future opportunity here is to scale that data mapping tool up so it can include data from other STEM education partners across the Highlands and Islands.
Ah, bringing everyone together.
Yeah. Imagine if they could integrate data from SSRC, Skills Development Scotland, local authority efforts. Then the whole region could demonstrate a truly joined-up strategic effort. This shared intelligence would stop people accidentally duplicating services, and it would let all partners target resources based on solid evidence of need. It's moving from lots of individual actions to proper regional orchestration.
Okay, that brings us nicely to Section 3, the deliverables. So the strategy's sound, the geography's mapped.
Mm-hmm.
What are the students and teachers actually getting their hands on? The core product seems to be the discovery kit.
That's right. The discovery kits are themed practical content bundles, and they're fully aligned to Scotland's curriculum for excellence. Now, that alignment is absolutely critical.
Why is that so critical?
because it ensures the program isn't seen as just an extra, you know, a nice-to-have add-on. It directly supports the curriculum teachers have to deliver anyway. That makes the kits invaluable classroom tools, not extra work. And sticking to that equity mandate, all the resources, all the supporting materials, they're available in both English and Gaelic.
That's really important for the region. Now, we mentioned earlier that teacher confidence is key. How is the delivery actually structured to maximize that confidence boost?
The delivery mechanism is paramount. The sources really emphasize that sessions are supplied at no cost to the school. That removes a huge financial barrier, especially for schools with tight budgets.
Yeah, essential.
Furthermore, the UII STEM outreach coordinators work directly alongside teachers and practitioners in the classroom. It's a co-delivery model. And that's the primary way they increase teacher confidence. It's practical, hands-on professional development happening right there.
Okay, let's look at the numbers then. For the period September 2023 to August 2025, what's the cumulative reach been like?
The scale is pretty substantial. Over 32,000 pre-primary and primary-age children participated in Discovery Kit sessions and other activities run by the team.
32,000. Wow.
Yeah. And what really validates that early years equity focus is the gender breakdown. The numbers of girls and boys involved were almost exactly equal.
That's fantastic.
It really is. Yeah. That parity at the primary level, that's a crucial step towards ensuring girls see STEM as a viable, desirable path for them.
So let's break down that 32,000 number geographically, because that really highlights the commitment to rural access, not just hitting big population centers.
Yeah, exactly. If you break it down by the local authorities, the spread is clearly deliberate. Highland region saw 7,600 children engage So Good penetration on the mainland. But then look at the Northern Isles, Shetland and Orkney, they reached 5,300. That's a massive percentage given their smaller population.
True.
Western Isles, 3,400. Moray and Aberdeenshire of 5,500. Perth and Kinross, 5,500. And Argyll and Bute, 4,700. So really reaching across the patch.
Yeah, it's not just in schools, right? They're out in the community too.
Definitely. In addition to the direct school delivery, the team supported over 190 other community-based STEM events, things like science fairs, festivals, workshops, reaching an estimated attendance of over 12,000 people.
That level of community presence, that's crucial for building what people call STEM capital at the family level, isn't it?
Absolutely. Those events normalize science and engineering, make it something families talk about outside the classroom. That's a key component of STEM capital. Now, if we look at the specific kits themselves, they really illustrate that second aim, leveraging collaboration.
Okay, give us those specific examples that show the power of bringing in external expertise.
Right, take the Planned Science Discovery Kit. This wasn't just created in-house at UHI. It was designed in collaboration with STEM education experts from UHI and experts from the prestigious Royal Botanical Gardens, Edinburgh, RBGE.
RBGE, okay.
Yeah. So that partnership ensures the content is scientifically rigorous, bang up to date, and it links directly to global challenges like the UN Sustainable Development Goals. It gives a really enriching global learning experience, but rooted in top-level expert knowledge.
That's bringing national-level resources right to local schools. What about numeracy, maths?
The Maths Tales Numeracy Playbags. These were created specifically for Maths Week Scotland. Apparently, they were hugely successful and highly requested.
Always a good sign.
Definitely. They became so effective, they're now being used widely across other parts of Scotland, too. And then naturally, given the region's geography, the Marine Science Discovery Kit adapted high-level content from their colleagues down at SAMS, the Scottish Association for Marine Sciences. This kind of iterative collaboration keeps the curriculum fresh and directly relevant to the region's marine industries.
Okay, and here's where we really see that immediate strategic alignment with the region's economic future, the new renewable energy kits. This must be where that industry funding is paying off directly.
Indeed it is. The team's currently collaborating with external partners, Alenergy and Bright Green, and they've got sponsorship from Northlands Power, to develop these cutting-edge kits focused on energy sources and sustainability. This came about because teachers directly asked for more resources to teach about the huge renewable energy projects happening, you know, right on their doorsteps.
I found the detail on the resource for younger learners particularly interesting. It seemed to go beyond just generic concepts.
It's highly targeted, very localized teaching. They're developing a play-based learning opportunity using a bespoke playmat.
A playmat.
Yeah. And crucially, this mat is tailored specifically to showcase local renewable energy opportunities and infrastructure within the UHI region. It doesn't just show a generic wind farm picture. It might show specific local turbines kids can actually see or connect energy production to local infrastructure, like battery storage projects or specific offshore wind zones nearby.
So they're intentionally teaching localized industrial literacy right from the earliest age, connecting the theory of energy to their own environment.
Exactly that. It encourages learners to make immediate real-world connections. And this approach, supported by structured conversation guides for the teachers, makes abstract concepts tangible. It demonstrates clear career relevance right there in their community. That's fundamental for building STEM capital. The kids see these industries not as something abstract or far away, but as part of their community's future.
Brilliant. Now, beyond the kits for pupils, the program clearly gets that educators themselves need ongoing support. They're actively helping PGDE students and probationer teachers too.
Yes, this is absolutely key for sustainability and building that long-term capacity. They develop targeted resources, including instructional videos, specifically for PGE primary students and for teachers doing their probationary year. The support's designed to make sure new teachers start their careers feeling equipped and confident to deliver high-quality science lessons from day one.
And the content focuses on practical classroom application, not just theory.
Oh, completely. The five video topics are highly relevant. First, how to support and raise science capital in your classroom. Second, a practical intro to coding for primary teachers, simple ideas, tips. Third, the benefits of and how to run simple classroom experiments. Fourth, a curated guide to useful websites and resources for STEM. And fifth, a guide to further STEM support, which explicitly points them towards the STEM Nation Award and, crucially, how to bring STEM ambassadors into their classrooms. This training is all about creating a supportive, self-sufficient teaching environment for STEM. Okay, if the model's excellent, the data should back it up. Let's move to section 4, measuring success. And the quantitative feedback from teachers looks almost universally positive.
Yeah, the feedback strongly validates the quality of that co-delivery model and just how professional the coordinators are. These averages are all out of a 5-star rating. The rating for presentation and communication by the STEM coordinator and their knowledge of the topic came in at an impressive 4.96 average.
4.96 out of 5. That suggests an incredibly high standard of coordinator training and delivery, achieving that consistency across such a vast dispersed region. That's the real insight there, isn't it? It validates the efficiency of their central training and quality control.
It really does. And the resources themselves were also highly praised. Topic and content, plus the materials and technologies provided, scored a 4.92 average rating. Even the admin side, the nuts and bolts were optimized. The booking process got a 4.86 average. It shows a real holistic focus on efficiency, which is vital when you're managing logistics across islands and remote areas.
But the real strategic measure, as we discussed, that key AIM 1 metric, is boosting teacher confidence. Did the program actually achieve that?
The results for confidence are really robust. After teachers took part in Lend a Lab session, that's the in-class, co-delivered support, the average rating for their confidence in delivering STEM lessons themselves afterwards was a strong 4.45 average.
4.45, that's significant.
It is. This metric is the true indicator of long-term sustainability. And the qualitative feedback totally backs this up. Teachers reported increased confidence with STEM topics they previously found daunting. They highly value the hands-on support in their own classroom, and the simple fact, they didn't have to source all the equipment and consumables themselves.
That quantitative data gives the structure, but yeah, it's the qualitative feedback, those aha moments that really bring the human impact to life.
They absolutely do. The teacher comments highlight the immediate, active engagement you see in the pupils. One teacher noted that both they and the students absolutely loved our STEM sessions, saying the children were fully engaged and involved.
Nice.
And they specifically mentioned how the coordinator's enthusiasm helped develop skills way beyond just the science lesson, things like confidence, problem solving, teamwork.
And there was that quote about the coding session that perfectly captures that breakthrough moment in learning.
Oh, it's priceless, isn't it? The teacher watching a Sphero coding session noted, watching them work so hard at the codes and suddenly it just clicks, that look on their face is priceless. That is the moment STEM capital is truly built, when a tough challenge is overcome and the student realizes, hey, I can master this technology.
Yeah. And the positive impact clearly filters beyond the school gates into family life, too.
Definitely. The feedback included a parent's perspective, which you don't often get, so it's really valuable. The parent was quoted saying they had never seen their child come home so enthusiastic and proud of himself. That genuine enthusiasm, That's key for sustaining engagement long term.
Absolutely.
And another teacher noted that children who sometimes struggle with traditional classroom settings, maybe listening skills, were actively involved in the hands-on kits. It just demonstrates that this practical interdisciplinary approach really does reach and engage learners who might otherwise get overlooked in more traditional science teaching.
Okay, we've tracked the delivery, measured the impact. Now let's look at section 5, strategic partnerships and the future. This program is clearly part of a wider regional infrastructure anchored by the Highlands and Islands STEM Partnership, or HSP.
That's right. HSP is the Strategic Regional Partnership. It's the body that oversees and guides how the Scottish government's wider STEM education and training strategy from 2017 is implemented across the Highlands and Islands.
Okay.
And crucially, it's chaired by UHI's Dean of the Science, Health, and Environment faculty. That positions UHI not just as a delivery partner, but as the strategic leader for STEM education in the whole region.
Right. To manage such a complex ecosystem, they must have pretty comprehensive representation around that table. Who are the essential players involved in HSP?
Yeah, the partnership includes all the major national and regional bodies you'd need for workforce development and education alignment. You got Skills Development Scotland, SDS, ensuring alignment with national workforce priorities. Highlands and Islands Enterprise, HIE, providing that regional economic development context. SLAC, the Scottish Schools Education Research Center, which provides the vital backbone for professional learning and accreditation for teachers.
Okay.
They're all the relevant local authorities, obviously. Developing the Young Workforce, DYW, managing that school-to-career transition piece. And the Scottish Funding Council. It's a comprehensive group.
Just listing those acronyms really shows the level of coordination needed. What are the practical benefits of having this high-level strategic group? What does it actually do?
Well, the sources outline three key benefits. First, it ensures coordinated, planned STEM engagement, streamlining support for events across the whole local network, avoiding clashes or duplication. Second, the group is vital for building local capacity, capability, and knowledge within the teaching workforce itself. And third, perhaps most important strategically, it allows for crucial data sharing that supports evidence-based decisions, particularly for helping students navigate that critical, often complex transition between primary and secondary school.
That shared data, that's how they maximize the return on that $1.2 million investment, isn't it? Making sure resources go where they're needed most, addressing those pinch points in the educational journey.
Exactly. Now, beyond the formal strategy meetings, the program has a really powerful presence out in the community as well.
Yeah, tell us about that.
The team commits to supporting loads of community engagement events every year. The biggest, most visible one is the spectacular Boffinarium at the Billedrum Tartan Heart Music Festival.
The Boffinarium. Love that name.
That's great, isn't it? Over just 3 days there, it attracts about 4,000 children for fun, hands-on STEM activities.
4,000 kids at a music festival. That is literally the definition of normalizing science and building that family STEM capital we talked about.
Exactly. They also support specific science festivals in places like Caithness, Orkney, Shetland, and the Science Weeks in Moray and Stornoway. And this community outreach, it relies heavily on two critical groups of people.
Okay.
UHI student volunteers, who get invaluable experience themselves, and the STEM ambassadors. Now, these are PVGDBS checked volunteers, coordinated by SCART. They're professionals actually working in STEM fields, who give their time to go into classrooms and bring real-world careers and applications to life for the kids.
So this shows the program's tackling the skills gap on three fronts simultaneously: curriculum support, teacher training, and large-scale public engagement. But the final strategic question, inevitably, is about sustainability.
That is the core challenge. Despite the program's clear successes, its efficiency, the sources are very clear. Scotland still faces a persistent critical skills gap in STEM fields. To fill that gap, you need a sustainable, robust education ecosystem. And maintaining that relies heavily on continuous industry collaboration.
And the current funding cycle, that $1.2 million, it has an end date approaching.
Correct. The current three-year program officially finishes in July 2026. So the immediate pressing ambition is obviously to secure sustained support and funding for the next phase academic year 2026-27 and beyond.
Right.
They've used the initial funding really efficiently. They've proven the model works in arguably the most challenging geographical context in the UK, and they've demonstrated clear value for money. The next step is leveraging that legacy to ensure it continues.
Okay, let's try and synthesize our takeaways then from this deep dive into the UHI STEM Outreach Program. What we've really seen is a highly effective, strategically very intelligent model. It successfully leverages significant industry funds, that 1.2 million pooled budget, and expert partnerships like RBGE and SAMS.
Mm-hmm. And they've achieved really impressive scale, reaching over 32,000 children with that crucial equitable gender participation, while simultaneously tackling the vital deficit in teacher confidence across one of Scotland's most geographically vast and challenging regions. They're hitting both the skills gap and the logistical challenges in one coordinated go.
So the final really right here really comes back to that analytical framework we've kind of woven through the discussion, STEM capital.
Yeah. The UHI program isn't just delivering isolated science lessons or fun coding workshops. Through the discovery kits, through that family engagement at festivals, through exposing kids to working professionals via the STEM ambassadors, they are explicitly, and you'd have to say successfully, building the knowledge, the experiences, the connections, the capital that young people need to actually see themselves pursuing future STEM careers. They're providing the currency kids need to access those high-value pathways later on.
And that brings us neatly to the final provocative thought for you, the listener. The sources make it crystal clear that Scotland's future economic prosperity leans heavily on high-growth, high-tech industries, specifically renewable energy and space.
Mm-hmm.
We know the UHI program is already trying to align locally, mentioning support for emerging sectors like the Saxeford Spaceport in Shetland, potential developments down in Macrahanish in Argyll, and they're developing those bespoke renewable energy playmats tailored to local infrastructure.
So given that critical and rapidly evolving need for workers in these sectors over the next 10 years, how dynamic does a successful regional education program actually need to be?
Yeah. How might programs like this need to adapt their local curriculum, updating those renewable playmats, refining kit content, not just maybe annually, but perhaps even semi-annually? The strategic challenge is ensuring that the specific education delivered today is perfectly aligned with the regional jobs being created tomorrow, recognizing just how fast skills needs change in these tech fields.
The education system almost needs to run slightly ahead of industry development, doesn't it? Not constantly be playing catch-up. That precision in local industrial literacy, that feels like the next frontier for these kinds of outreach programs.
Fantastic analysis of a really complex, impressive strategic model. That's all the time we have for this deep dive into the UAI STEM outreach program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.